A Contra Podcast Conversations for the Curious Essential Knowledge Simplified, your gateway to essential ideas that matter most. Welcome to the Deep Dive.
I'm genuinely excited about today's session because, well, we're exploring a really game-changing work. It's one that fundamentally shifted how a lot of people saw life, the universe, everything.
Absolutely. We're diving into Henri Bergson's creative evolution, and it really did land like a philosophical bombshell back then.
Yeah.
It seriously questioned, you know, the basic ways we thought we understood life itself.
Right. And our goal here, our mission for this deep dive, is really to unpack Bergson's big idea. The idea that life isn't just some machine grinding away or following a script that's already written out.
Mm-hmm.
Instead, he says it's driven by this constant inherent creative impulse.
Yeah, and that perspective, it gives you such a powerful way to think about real novelty, real creativity, not just out there in the cosmos, but, you know, in our own experience too.
Mm. And that feels so relevant today, doesn't it? Totally. I mean, the world's complex. We're drowning in information. So understanding how genuine creativity pops up, how new things actually emerge, and crucially, how we can maybe perceive reality a bit more deeply than just the surface level stuff, that's huge.
Yeah, it really is. It feels vital for like personal growth, innovation, just navigating all the change.
Exactly. So, okay, let's talk about the man himself. Henri Louis Bergson, born 1859. He became this hugely influential French philosopher, late 19th, early 20th century, a real intellectual giant of his time.
And what a journey he had. He started out deep in maths and sciences, really rigorous stuff.
Yeah.
Then made this fascinating switch over to philosophy.
Yeah.
Held top academic posts, Collège de France, and then the Nobel Prize in Literature. Not even philosophy, but literature in 1927.
Which says so much, right, about his ideas being rich and vitalizing, as they put it. And just how brilliantly he could write.
Definitely. The way he presented his ideas was almost art in itself.
And he was kind of uniquely positioned to write creative evolution, wasn't he? Because he didn't just take scientific findings at face value. He dug into how we understand them.
Right. The method.
Yeah, he could blend insights from biology, psychology, metaphysics. He looked at evolution from all these angles, bridging science and philosophy. Not many could do that.
And his earlier work set the stage, didn't it? Things like time and free will, matter and memory.
Absolutely laid the groundwork, introduced those core concepts like durée, that idea of lived, flowing time, not clock time.
And the difference between intuition and intellect,
mm-hmm.
crucial for what comes next. Okay, so we know the thinker. Let's get into the book itself, Creative Evolution. 1907, this wasn't just another philosophy book. It felt more like his big statement, his whole philosophy of life laid out.
For sure. And its main aim, to really shake up the standard explanations for evolution people were using. You have a mechanistic view, life is just physics and chemistry, like a complicated clockwork.
Right. Just cause and effect.
And then the opposite, the teleological view, life following some grand predetermined design. A blueprint.
Like it was all planned out from the start.
Exactly. And Bergson said, nope, neither of those really gets the dynamism, the sheer creativity of life. What makes it feel alive?
This is where the famous bit comes in, right? The élan vital.
That's it. The vital impetus, his central idea. Life is driven by this creative, unpredictable force. It's not pushed from outside. It's inherent within life.
Like an inner spring.
Yeah, constantly pushing forward, creating new things, more complexity, not following a map, but making the path.
And what's amazing is how widely he applies this. It's not just biology.
No, not at all. He looks at how consciousness evolves, how intelligence and instinct develop. He's really pushing us, the reader, to use what he calls intuition, to try and grasp the fluid, time-bound nature of reality.
Which is so different from how our intellect usually works, breaking things down.
Right, our analytical mode.
So the book is basically saying, look, the universe isn't some fixed machine you can just figure out piece by piece.
It's open, it's creative, it's still unfolding.
And here's the really cool part, maybe, just maybe, through this intuition thing. We can actually sense that unfolding. We can tap into it.
That's the invitation, yeah, to become aware of the creative process itself.
Okay, let's dig into that a bit more. How does he build this argument? He starts with how we know things, right?
Exactly. He lays it out right at the beginning. Two ways of knowing. There's relative knowledge, that's our intellect, analytical, looking at things from the outside.
Like taking a photo of something?
Kind of. And then there's absolute knowledge, that's intuition, direct, getting inside the thing itself. And he says, if you really want to understand life, you've got to lean into intuition.
Makes sense. So, chapter one, the evolution of life mechanism and teleology. He takes on the big theories.
Right away. He critiques both radical mechanism life as just random mutations, a strict Darwinian view, maybe,
Just chance.
and radical finalism life marching toward some preset goal.
The blueprint idea again.
Yeah. He says both miss the actual creativity inherent in the process. They make it too automatic, too predictable, or too random without direction.
And he has that amazing example, doesn't he? The eye.
Oh, yeah, the eye example is classic Bergson. He points to the vertebrate eye, like ours, and then the eye in mollusks, like a scallop. Structurally, surprisingly similar complex eyes.
But they evolved totally independently on completely different branches of the evolutionary tree.
Exactly, vastly different lineages.
So, how does pure random chance explain developing something so complex twice in such similar ways?
Right.
Or how does a rigid plan allow for these like independent solutions?
Yeah.
It just doesn't quite fit, does it?
It really makes you think. And that's where Bergson brings in the élan vital. It's his answer. This shared internal creative drive. It's solving similar problems, like needing to see, but it finds different ways to do it depending on the materials, the circumstances. It's an impulse, not a detailed instruction sheet.
Okay, that's a powerful idea, a shared impulse. So life has this drive, but it doesn't all go in one direction.
Not at all. And that's chapter two, the divergent directions of the evolution of life. Torpor, instinct, intelligence. He sees the original élan vital as this single burst, almost. But as it pushes against the resistance of matter, the physical world, it fragments. It goes
Oh,
off in different directions.
like a river splitting into streams.
Good analogy. And he identifies three main tendencies, three main paths it took.
Okay, what are they?
First, torpor, think plants. They focus on capturing and storing energy photosynthesis, but they sacrifice mobility and, Bergson argues, higher consciousness. It's a sort of evolutionary siding in terms of awareness.
Okay, makes sense. Fixed in place, focused on energy. What's next?
Instinct. He sees this perfected in arthropods, especially insects. His example of the hunting wasp, the sphex, is just incredible, how it paralyzes a caterpillar with stinging precision.
Yeah, I remember reading about that. It keeps it alive, but immobile for its larvae.
Exactly, perfect innate knowledge for a specific task, but it's unconscious, inflexible. It's like the tool is built into their very being, organized instruments, he calls them. They can't adapt it easily.
Wow. Okay, so torpor, instinct,
Yeah.
and the third.
Intelligence. This is the path vertebrates took leading up to humans, characterized by mobility, flexibility, adaptability, and crucially, the ability to make and use tools outside our bodies. Unorganized instruments.
Things we invent and adapt.
Right. Intelligence is about abstraction, problem solving, understanding things from the outside, manipulating the environment.
And he sees these not just as different strategies, but different kinds of consciousness.
Fundamentally different forms of consciousness, yeah. Each a unique solution the élan vital came up with for the challenge of living and acting.
Fascinating. So, where does that leave us with our intelligence?
Well, that's chapter three, on the meaning of life, the order of nature, and the form of intelligence. Here's a key argument. Our human intelligence didn't evolve to grasp ultimate reality.
Oh, what did it evolve for then?
Primarily, he says, as a practical tool for acting on the world, manipulating solid objects, dealing with space.
Like figuring out how to build things, hunt things, navigate practical stuff.
Exactly. It's brilliant at that, but
There's a but.
there's a but. Our intellect, because it's so good at chopping things up into stable, manageable units, it has a built-in bias.
A bias, how so?
It naturally imposes a kind of logical, almost geometric order onto the world. It sees separate objects, fixed states. It thinks in terms of space.
Which is useful for building a bridge.
Absolutely. But that very strength becomes a weakness when we try to understand things that are fundamentally about flow, continuity, change, like life itself.
So our tool for understanding actually shapes and maybe limits what we can
That's
understand.
the bombshell, yeah. Our intellect is amazing for matter, but it struggles with the fluidity of life and time.
Wow. Okay, that leads into his next big metaphor,
Yep.
right? The cinema.
Perfect transition. Chapter four, the cinematographical mechanism of thought and the mechanistic illusion. his famous cinematographical metaphor, think about how a movie projector works.
It flashes still images really fast.
Right. Static frames, one after another, creating the illusion of smooth movement.
Okay.
Bergson says our intellect does something similar with reality, especially with change and movement. It takes snapshots, static concepts, moments frozen in time, and reconstructs the flow from these stills.
So we're not grasping the movement itself, just a series of fixed points that represent it.
That's his point. And this leads to the mechanistic illusion. We start believing that reality is just these static parts, these frames, that we can understand the whole process just by analyzing the components.
And we miss the actual flowing, the continuous becoming, the durée he talked about earlier.
Exactly. We mistake the reconstruction for the reality, like thinking the stack of film frames is the movie experience.
So how do we get past that illusion? Back to intuition.
Back to intuition. He says we need to cultivate this intellectual sympathy. It's not about thinking about life from the outside, analyzing its frames. It's about trying to place ourselves within the flow.
Feeling the rhythm almost.
Yes. Feeling its momentum, like understanding a melody, not by looking at the individual notes on the page, but by hearing it, by feeling its progression.
Yeah.
That's intuition getting inside duration.
Okay, pulling it all together now.
Yeah.
What are the big recurring themes we should take away from creative evolution?
Several really stand out. First, obviously, the élan vital as a creative force. It's not a thing. It's a process, a continuity of shooting forth, as he puts it.
Always pushing, always creating.
Yeah. Driving towards complexity, freedom, novelty. Think about your own urge to learn or create something new that's a little echo of it.
And time is creative duration durée. This is fundamental.
Absolutely. Not clock time, which just measures space, basically, but live time, the continuous flow where the past isn't gone, it's carried into the present, shaping a future that's genuinely new and unpredictable.
Like how all your past experiences make you who you are now and influence what you do next in a unique way.
Exactly. Every moment is pregnant with its past and creating something novel.
Then there's the limitations of human intelligence. This one's provocative.
It is. Our intellect is brilliant for practical problems, for dealing with matter. But it hits a wall with life, consciousness, duration.
It's a reminder that maybe analysis isn't always the best tool. That sometimes we need to feel or sense things.
Precisely. It has blind spots for the fluid aspects of reality.
And the split he talked about. The divergence of instinct and intelligence.
Yeah. Seeing them as two different valid paths. Not seeing intelligence as simply superior. Instinct has its own kind of genius, even if it's inflexible. It values different ways of knowing. Maybe trusting your gut sometimes isn't so irrational.
And maybe my favorite. Evolution is genuinely creative and unpredictable.
That's the really radical, hopeful message, isn't it?
Yeah. The future isn't just locked in by the past. There are real leaps, real novelty.
It's not a machine simply running its program. It's an open-ended creation, which implies our own lives have that same potential for genuine openness.
Bergson really had a way of phrasing things, too. Some lines just stick with you.
He really did, like this one. To exist is to change is to mature is to go on creating oneself endlessly.
Well, that directly plugs into durée, right?
Yeah.
Life is this ongoing self-creation.
Exactly. Being alive isn't being static, it's actively becoming.
And this one's a bit challenging. The intellect is characterized by a natural inability to comprehend life.
It sounds like a diss on intellect. But it's not really.
No, it's highlighting its limits, right?
Yeah.
Saying we need something else, like intuition, to grasp the living flow.
Precisely. We need more than just logic for certain kinds of understanding.
And his definition of intelligence. Intelligence, in its original function, is the faculty of manufacturing artificial objects, especially tools, to make tools, and of varying the manufacturer indefinitely.
It frames us as the tool makers, doesn't it? Very pragmatic. Makes you rethink what smart really means.
Yeah, it's about adaptability and making things. And this one captures the core drive. The impetus of life consists in a need of creation, strives to introduce into it the largest possible amount of indetermination and liberty.
That's the élan vital in a nutshell. The push towards freedom, towards novelty, towards openness. It's fundamentally optimistic.
It's amazing how these sort of high-level philosophical ideas actually connect to everyday life.
They really do. Think about personal development. Instead of rigid, step-by-step goals, which is a very mechanistic way to think about your life.
Like following a preset plan.
Right. Bergson suggests embracing life as more of an open-ended creative project. Trust your intuition more, be open to unexpected turns, value the process of becoming.
The journey, not just the destination.
Exactly. And in decision-making, it's about valuing that intuitive gut feeling alongside your rational pros and cons list. Sometimes the complex stuff needs that holistic sense.
And I can see it in business innovation, too. Real breakthroughs often feel like leaps, right? Not just shuffling the same pieces.
Yeah, they come from that creative impulse, not just linear planning. So creating space for intuition, for experimentation, for things not going exactly to plan, that becomes really important.
Less rigid control, more fostering creativity. Same for education, maybe. Encouraging intuitive leaps, different ways of knowing, not just memorizing facts.
Definitely. Moving beyond just the analytical.
So wrapping up, what's your big personal takeaway from revisiting Bergson?
For me, it's that sense of re-enchantment. He takes this potentially cold, mechanical view of the universe and makes it feel alive again. Dynamic, creative, vibrant. And it validates that feeling that there's more to knowing than just logic. That intuitive sense we sometimes have.
Yeah, I get that. What hits me most is that radical openness he talks about. The idea that the future isn't fixed. And the challenge to purely reductionist thinking, trying to understand everything just by its parts, it really makes you step back. So the final thought for you listening is, what does this mean for you? If you consciously try to embrace your own creative impulse, that personal élan vital, how might that change how you face challenges or see opportunities in your own life? See you next time with another remarkable thinker, another powerful book, and another idea that has shaped our world. This audio summary is brought to you by Akatra Foundation.